Welcome to the Research Reimagined podcast, brought to you by Nottingham Trent University. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be inviting some of NTU's brightest minds to explore how their research is helping us to deepen our understanding of the world. From online addictions to transgender rights and sleep disorders, listen as we discuss some of society's most pressing challenges and uncover some of the ways our research is making a difference. The Olympics attracts a global audience of around 3 billion people, offering an immense opportunity for advertisers and sponsors. In this episode, we'll explore the evolution of sponsorship and marketing at this international event, discussing its significance and the impacts it has on everyone involved. Joining me are senior lecturers David Cook and Steve Bingham from Nottingham Business School, who'll provide deeper insights into this fascinating topic. Hi, David. Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Helen.
Thank you.
David, do you want to start by just telling us a little bit about why marketing is so important at major sporting events like the Olympics and the Paralympics?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the idea of brands and firms associating themselves with events such as sport events like the Olympics has been kind of, you know, throughout the 20th century, it's gained traction and become bigger. There are several benefits. I think the most obvious one, particularly for the sport event, is income, is money. You look at the Olympic model, and around 60% of their income comes from broadcast revenue and around 30% from sponsorship, and the other 10% is kind of made up of slightly smaller investments. So money is a big thing. The idea of being associated with different types of companies, and they have a number of different kind of categories of their top tier sponsorship from the sponsor perspective and other companies and organizations that associate themselves with the games. It's this idea of image transfer. So the idea that, you know, the Olympics stands for certain values, the Olympic movement and all the things it stands for. It's this idea that the company that associates with the Olympics will almost gain some of these attributes by being associated with them. So there are several benefits, but they're kind of the key ones really for both the event and the sponsor.
It does happen in wider sports as well. You know, coming out of the Olympics for just a moment, if you look at Formula One, for example, Rolex pay, I think, $50 million a year to sponsor Formula One. If you look at the Super Bowl, it's about $7 million for a 30-second ad. So there is real money in this, and all because really it returns on its investment as well. So it's definitely within the organisation's interest to sponsor these big events.
That's it. And I think the thing with the Olympics as well, probably more so than any other event, you know, is the coverage that these sponsors get, probably even more so than the FIFA World Cup. Mm. Think about the amount of sports involved, the amount of countries involved, the amount of athletes involved. It really is kind of the absolute pinnacle if you're a sponsor and able to, you know, have the revenue, have the, you know, big enough sponsor to be able to sponsor the Olympics. Because obviously not every organisation, unfortunately, is going to be able to do it. You know, they're not going to have the budget to do it. But if you've got the budget to do it, you know, it's probably the one that is almost the most sought after, you know, event to associate with.
I think if you're the host nation as well, there's quite a lot of pressure on domestic organisations in order to try and affiliate themselves with the Olympics. So if you look at Air France, Carrefour, for example, I mean, Carrefour exited the UK, I think, in the early 2000s. Now they're a big sponsor again. Would this potentially launch some kind of entry strategy back into the UK?
And I think one of the final things to say is important to say it's not just the Olympics, it's absolutely the Paralympics as well. Mm-hmm. You know, quite recently it was announced that, you know, if you were to be a sponsor of the Olympics, you are now, if you're a top sponsor, you're a top sponsor of both the Paralympics and the Olympics. So that's really important. I think we've seen how the Paralympic movement, you know, you think about London 2012 and the amount of exposure, particularly in that period that it got, and obviously the Paralympics has grown and grown since then. You know, it's great that the two are now interlinked, and that again for sponsors gives them the opportunity in terms of their activation to think more broadly around, well, it's not just the Olympics, we might have some kind of activation that perhaps covers both events, but actually more and more we're seeing specific kind of activity and activation related to the Paralympics, and we'll probably touch upon some of that stuff later. But it's great that the two now are kind of, you know, tied together, if you like, from a sponsorship point of view.
And so the complexities of sponsorship. So something like the Olympic Games, obviously you've got your major sponsors, then you have your individual international Olympic committees, and you've got individual athletes. Can you talk to me a little bit about how those things all get blended together and how they can work so all sponsorship kind of gets the benefit from it, all those sponsors?
I think a lot of it is about choosing the appropriate sponsors. So if you look at Cadbury's, for example, they sponsored the London 2012 Olympics, and there was quite a lot of question at the time as to why Cadbury's would sponsor such an event. Well, as we know, Cadbury's traditionally was is a very well-known British brand, now owned by Mondelez. But you think, well, a chocolatier sponsoring an event whereby you're supposed to be at your peak physical fitness, is it really appropriate? Again, McDonald's fell into that same trajectory as well. But I think, again, from the sponsor's point of view, it's more about being there, being present and being heard, really, and seeing for what they are. I mean, Dave, what do you think of that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, Helen, back to your kind of question a second ago around, you know, the complexity of it all. There's an enormous amount of complexity, you know, the minute that we have commercial entities associating themselves with not only sport properties, but other event and other kind of properties that can be, you know, sponsored and associated with. There's so many layers to it. And I think, you know, without going into loads of, you know, making it too kind of research heavy, this chat, because obviously we're researchers, we can get bogged down in the detail of that. But if you look, we try to be, yeah. You know, if you look at some of the, you know, the academic literature around kind of sponsorship and events, what we're seeing now really is this evolution from more of a transactional relationship between the sponsor and the property to more of a network ecosystem based approach. So, you know, some of the things you touched upon there, that there were multiple stakeholders or actors, we would call them, you know, almost entities that have, you know, if you like, skin in the game. What's their kind of, you know, reason for being involved? What do they want to get out of it? And yes, you've got your sport event, you've got your sponsor, but you've got various other stakeholders as well. You've got the athletes themselves. You've got the Olympic associations, as you mentioned. You've got the general public. You've got the host communities. You know, you've got the media. You've got government. You've got so many different stakeholders that have got a role to play in the event.
National Lottery also.
Yeah.
They fund a lot of the Olympians in their training.
Absolutely. You know, we could almost sit here and do a whole podcast on the amount of different people involved, the different stakeholders. But yeah, really complex. And actually the way that theory is evolving is to actually look at some of these things and look at these stakeholders and thinking, well, actually, thinking about networks and ecosystems, how it all linked together, and this idea of sharing value. You know, what is it that we bring to the table and what is it that we take away? And almost the event itself is a bit like a platform for everything to be shared and integrated and for different stakeholders to sort of gain benefits as a result.
Yeah, can we explore that a little bit further in terms of like what do the sponsors get, what do the Olympics get, and what sort of conversations would those two organisations have to kind of make sure that they get the maximum they want to from that sponsorship deal on both sides?
It's a really interesting area, and again, it's something that's evolved in recent years. You know, we talk about the transactional side, so at the most basic level, the sponsor pays money, and as a result, they slap their logo everywhere and it's job done. And don't get me wrong, there's still plenty of that going on. And I think there's still plenty of work to be done to evolve that. But I think what you're seeing now is a lot more of this kind of idea, you know, these ideas kind of as part of the contract. So as part of the contract, you know, as a sponsor, you will be obligated to do X, Y, and Z. So I think this, the event properties are getting a bit more kind of in tune with actually, you know, hosting Olympics is a massive thing. Hosting a World Cup is a massive thing. There's a huge amount of cost involved. There's loads of criticism and controversies around corruption and the cost of staging them and all these different things. So actually, the amounts of money involved, particularly from the sponsor side, how do we use that a bit better? How do we make more of that? You know, if there's millions and even billions being involved in these sponsorship deals, can we utilize some of that and optimize that in a better way for society? So in terms of kind of examples, I mean, Steve's got, you know, no doubt, you know, come onto this in a second, but there's loads of great examples of almost where we're seeing a win for both, a win for the sport event and a win for the sponsor and a win for society, almost this win-win-win approach. That's ideally where we want to get to and see a lot more of in sponsorships.
I think ideally, yeah, but I think in the actual practicality of it, sometimes doesn't happen. If you look at the wider legacy of the Olympic Games, when the Games is finished in that particular country, if you look at the stadiums, for example, either one, they fall into disrepair, or two, they're having to be reused for something else. So if you look at London 2012, for example, we built this beautiful Olympic stadium. It's now a football stadium. And having been to West Ham away, I support West Brom, it's not the best ground to go and watch a football match at. There was a guy in front of me that actually had binoculars to see a goal at the other end of the pitch.
Steve, just to briefly interrupt there, is there any good ground, away ground, that's good at watching West Brom? Because they normally lose at any ground, don't they?
That's a matter of opinion. What is it? Burton, isn't it?
But let's not get into that.
Yeah, let's not. But moving back slightly, you know, what is the wider legacy of these games? If you look post-2012, less people are actually involved in sport. When you think, actually, the effect will be the opposite to that. You think more people would be getting involved in sport. So, yes, there's all this money being thrown around. Yes, it's brilliant to host these games. You know, is it almost like a national vanity project to say, look at us, we can host these different things? But actually, what is the legacy post these games? Does it really match up? Does it really get fed back into wider society?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation when it comes to hosting games, isn't it? Because obviously there's always controversy around each Olympics, there's something, but it does seem that it is becoming harder and harder to host. Which cities can do it because of the cost of these? So that's where I suppose sponsorship is vitally important. And perhaps from an outsider's perspective, we don't think about that. And I know from an athlete's perspective, I competed at the Athens Olympics, that didn't think anything about the other side of the sport until you kind of get an insight into media, getting interviews and taken into a whole nother world of, oh, okay, this is a lot bigger than just me. And I think sometimes from the television perspective, you're sat there, you're watching, you're invested in those athletes that you love. You don't actually think about any of those other aspects if you're purely there for the love of sport.
Yeah, and I think it's, again, I suppose the evolution of sponsorship is to try and bring more of that experiential side into it. You know, again, moving away from logos being slapped on an event and sort of pretty weak, sort of very limited, not very imaginative activation, having that more experiential side to it as well is really important. You know, a few years ago, I was lucky enough to go to the Invictus Games, so it's obviously not the Olympics, but, you know, and obviously an event with a very certain, you know, very specific remit and kind of reason for being and reason for existing. But you looked at some of the sponsors there, and actually, I wonder going forward, actually, the likes of the Olympics and other events, could they almost learn a few lessons from the sort of thing that we see at the Invictus Games? You know, you look at Jaguar Land Rover and how they kind of involve themselves with the event. You know, the vehicles transport the athletes. They have even a challenge. One of the events in the Olympic in the Invictus Games is kind of a driving challenge with some of the vehicles. You know, they look to recruit ex kind of service personnel to their workforce. They know they're actively recruiting at the event itself. So this is just a few examples of kind of what, you know, a more, you know, shall we say, kind of evolutionary sponsorship can look like at events like this.
I think as well, you know, with the amount of money that is being, you know, invested in sponsorships, you know, with the Olympics, you know, how can those costs be offset against people who just want to go and watch the games? So if you look at the pricing for the tickets for the Paris Olympics, for example, for the athletics final, the minimum is €125 a ticket and the maximum is €980. You know, we're in a global cost of living crisis at the minute. You know, people are going to struggle to afford these prices. And the Parisians at the minute are going mad because, you know, there's so many social and economic problems in France at the minute. And yet, they're hosting these games whereby the average cost is $5.4 billion to host these games. Why isn't this money being injected into problems at home? Why are we actually beginning to host this? So in actual fact, you know, whilst, you know, sponsorship is really, really effective, there is an actual role, because these costs really should be offset against, you know, offset against customers to make sure that they can actually go and watch the games, because it is a global event. It is for people.
And Steve, I think you make a really good point there in terms of, you know, the local hostility that we can see towards events such as the Olympics. And we've seen that in recent times. You know, you only have to go back to, for example, the Brazil Olympics. There was a fair amount of hostility there in terms of, you know, why are we hosting this event where there's so many other things that the country really should be spending its money on? And actually turning that around a little bit, you know, back to the sponsors, actually that's another reason why, you know, sponsorship, commercial relationships with events need to do more for society, need to do more for everyone involved, because that would at least alleviate some of that kind of criticism and negativity to say, look, okay, this is a big event. It's clearly going to cost quite a lot of money to host, but as a result, there will be what we would term them as multiplier effects. You know, this event's being hosted, but as a result, you're still going to see long-term benefits as a result of this taking place, and sponsors doing more can help to contribute towards that.
And I, as with everything at the minute, you know, the way that society, the world has changed with the introduction of social media and how big that is now, there's a lot of wider scope for sponsorship and that kind of marketing, branding, awareness. Can you tell me a little bit about how it shifted, say, in the last 20 years? Like if you go back to, say, Athens 2004 to now Paris 2024, like what's been the shift in terms of the kind of sponsorship deals, the brands that are involved, and what do you see is also the future?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Helen. You know, the massive thing is this idea of fragmentation. You know, this idea of kind of multi-screen viewings and accessibility of events. You know, traditionally we stick the TV on, and I still try and do that when I get chance, but less chance these days. But you know, TV is still a massive medium. It's still almost the primary, predominant global form of broadcast. But yeah, absolutely, smartphones, tablets. tablets, on demand, on the go. It's obviously, you know, increasing massively. And brands have to adapt to that, don't they? So you know, think of some of your activations and communications around the event. You know, you can almost do that more live discussion with the audience now that you've got kind of, you know, if you look at our students, for example, you know, smartphone is almost part of the anatomy now, isn't it, for many people. So being able to almost have that, you know, as we would call it, always on dialogue with our audience is both powerful, but also quite, you know, we've got to be look at the opposite side of it. It can be quite a dangerous thing as well. You know, social media has a massive power for good, but it also has a massive power for bad. You know, and it's something that sponsors need to, power that they need to wield carefully. You know, going back to some specific examples, Steve, I don't know if you want to touch on the, you know, the superhuman example, for instance. You know, that's a really good way of kind of how a brand has kind of, or think about Channel 4, how they've worked with this program over a number of years and kind of really sort of given the sort of athletes involved in that program such a massive, powerful platform.
Absolutely. And again, it's something that we need to see more in terms of wider society as well. I think, you know, if we're touching back to the social media elements of it, you know, it was 3.4 billion hits on TikTok in the previous Olympics. So you're thinking there's really, really huge numbers here. And again, if you're looking at the nature of the way in which it's advertised, you know, we're not talking about 30, 40 second television adverts anymore. We're talking about 10, 15 second adverts. So what does the sponsor do in order to encapsulate the intention and get their message across to its viewership in an even shorter amount of time? So this is something, you know, going back to your earlier question as to what they need to do and need to change in order to move forward, really. And again, if you look at the Beijing Olympics, you know, the most popular site was Weibo, which is a Chinese social media site, 24 billion hits on that as well. So again, how does it affect domestic and national followings and all of these different platforms as well?
Yeah, and I think again the social media aspect of it just lends itself a lot more to these kind of co-created type campaigns. You know, perhaps back to your question, Helen, 2004, you know, brands don't necessarily have that in their toolkit to be able to think, how is a campaign almost going to grow? How could it kind of be developed? Almost, we might sow the seed, but then our audience goes off and does something else with it. You know, think about, I don't know, you see competitions where the likes of, you know, we've touched upon Cadbury's already and Walkers and different brands will kind of have, you know, competitions where come up with a flavour, for example. It just gives the audience that opportunity to get involved and kind of be absolutely part of it. Again, going back to some of the marketing literature, value co-creation. It's not just you as a brand doing it all yourselves. You have to work with your audience. You have, and quite often something better will kind of be created as a result if you're working together in partnership with other audiences.
It's cracking research from a marketing point of view, because you want that continuous engagement with your audience. Because again, if you do begin to ignore them and if you do begin to lose us to where you're going, you know, what's that going to mean for your products and services at the end of the day? So it's really, really important that, again, that engagement is maintained through whichever platform that you as an organisation feel is necessary.
And I think the other thing on that as well is the type of sponsors that are now involved. You know, for example, compared to 20 years ago, the IOC are very kind of regularly reviewing their categories. You know, what's our current kind of most contemporary list of categories that our sponsors could be drawn from? And you look at Airbnb, for example. Mm. I mean, I don't know exactly when Airbnb, a lot of these companies tend to be formed way earlier than what you thought. I mean, it might have even existed in 2004. I guess not, but who knows? But certainly, I definitely hadn't heard of it in 2004.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Probably
sure it didn't exist then. But, you know, they're now one of the main sponsors of the Olympics, you know. And actually, that's just shows the rapid, you know, evolution of sponsors. You know, and 20 years ago, we wouldn't have even had a category that Airbnb would be involved in. But now, you know, it's just something that's so dynamic and changing, almost games to games, you know.
So tell me a little bit about the categories then. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's, again, relatively fluid. I mean, there are sort of categories that will stand the test of time. I mean, there are a number of sponsors of the Olympics that have been doing it for decades, you know, whereas there are newer sponsors. And again, it's something that the events will review and they'll think, actually, you know, for example, when McDonald's stopped sponsoring. So McDonald's, you know, we touched upon McDonald's earlier. Massive sponsor of the Olympics, pumped absolutely billions into the Olympics, one of their biggest sponsors. And then I think it was 2017, they basically just pulled out. You know, they pulled out of the agreement about 3 years early. Again, criticism of junk food and the way that actually going forward, you know, the Olympics wanted to be seen. But that's one example of something that actually, there isn't a fast food sponsor now. And I doubt there will be one for the foreseeable future, you know. But it's that balance, I think, from the Olympics point of view of kind of having their optimum kind of categories, but equally where's the revenue coming from? And they've got to find that balance. Like we said a bit earlier, we've got to be realistic. Money does talk. It's very important. But at the same time, you know, certainly the savvier and more popular events, you know, think about some events don't necessarily have the luxury to be able to be so selective with their sponsors. Whereas the Olympics, as we said before, absolutely prime event, you know, the most sought after event probably to be associated with. They've got a lot more flexibility of who they can choose to kind of be associated with. So these categories are very regularly reviewed, and there are kind of sponsorship cycles. So the sponsors will tend to be involved for a sponsorship cycle, and then it will be reviewed. So recently we've seen that Toyota, there's strong rumours that Toyota are going to end their agreement after the current Olympics. I would imagine there'd be another automotive, you know, sponsor that would come to replace them. But as we've seen with McDonald's, that category just ended at that point.
It does make you hungry though, doesn't it? When you see all these athletes on the running track, you do think, actually, I could really fancy a Big Mac.
I think the Olympic Village will be a sad place without McDonald's. I'm joking. But I can clearly remember as my event finished, the McDonald's queue each day got longer and longer as the athletes finished, and it was a very good one. Plus, I did get a free McDonald's card for a year after I won
my
medal.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, it wasn't probably maximised. I'd probably make better use of it now. But yeah, probably highlights though the time 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure that today that would be the right thing to be giving people.
I bet you were popular with your McDonald's card. Mm. I mean, I don't know if many of your friends knew about it, but were they tapping you up for sort of Big Macs and
early
like that?
Early morning breakfast. I think. Yeah,
yeah,
that was mainly the thing.
Confident McMuffin.
Anyway.
Are there any other kind of impacts that are important to talk about and think about when we're looking at the sponsorship and the kind of involvement of stakeholders around these major sporting events?
Yeah, absolutely, Helen. I think one thing we haven't touched upon yet as part of this is, you know, inherently events such as the Olympics, you can't get around the fact that they are massive creators of or generators of carbon. You know, the carbon footprint of an event like the Olympics is huge. You know, you've got everyone traveling there, you've got all the athletes, all the teams, all the fans that are going to watch it. You know, it is massive, massive generator of carbon. So, yes. You know, inherently there are things that can be done to reduce that and mitigate that, but essentially you're always going to have that kind of element to it. So almost taking that as a little bit of a given, what's the flip side to that? And the flip side to that is potentially the opportunity, the platform that the event provides. As we've already said, it's a massive window of opportunity for brands to be associated with. It's a very desirable thing that brands want to be a part of. So actually having this window, having this platform, how can brands use it effectively to kind of counteract that? And one of the key things that they can do is use it as a force for good. So use it as a platform for educating people. You know, okay, if we say that there's a lot of carbon footprint generated, let's at least educate people. And with the mass audience that an event such as the Olympics has, the opportunity to kind of not patronize but educate people through our kind of activations actually can do a massive amount of good. You know, even if it's something as simple as educating people against things like single-use plastic bottles, it's one of my pet hates. You still see a hell of a lot of that in sports. You know, look at tennis. You know, you still see at the end of a tennis match, the tennis players tend to have rows and rows of plastic bottles lined up. So I think it's not always about the big things. It's not always about the sort of the massive, you know, showy kind of adverts. That's really nice and it's really important, but it's about the smaller things as well and just educating people in the right way. You know, on a local level, Audi have been a sponsor of Team GB for a number of years, and they've done a lot of work around promoting healthy eating. So in a similar way, Steve mentioned earlier kind of the obesity aspect and McDonald's and Cadbury's, but actually Audi have done quite a lot of work with some of the British athletes to say, look, you know, this is the sort of healthy produce that we offer. These are kind of recipes that you could create that are healthy. So it's absolutely, it can be a force for good as well.
I think just on that, I don't know if you remember, and we're going slightly off the Olympics here for a minute, in the previous World Cup where Ronaldo for Portugal was giving a press conference, and he went in and it was Coca-Cola that was sponsoring, and there was a bottle there, and he moved the bottle and said, don't drink that, drink water. That did more, I think it was either for Evian or Volvic, one of the big water brands, for them, than any kind of sponsorship deal with FIFA in that respect. So again, you know, it is an opportunity to educate people, of course, about reducing the carbon footprint, about heating healthier, reducing waste as well would be another one that would tie into that. So it definitely is that platform to educate people on a variety of different matters.
And I think as well, just the other thing that we touched upon linked to that is the social media aspect. So this gains traction and it grows legs when you multiply it by social media. So your Ronaldo kind of example there. Again, we talked a little bit earlier about, say, 20 years ago or 30 years ago before everyone had a smartphone. that wouldn't have been anywhere near as impactful. But you think about the amount of times these clips are shared, they're discussed, they're reposted. You know, it just shows how it all multiplies, and having a positive message that can be relayed in that way can only do a massive amount of good.
And do you feel this is the direction that stakeholders will take it and sponsors will look to move with it?
Absolutely. I think, as we sort of mentioned a bit earlier, it is, you know, sponsorship is absolutely not there yet. It's very much evolving, but it absolutely is evolving from this more transactional kind of relationship to a more, you know, forward-thinking, collaborative, joined-up approach where we think about wider society. We're not just in it for, you know, in it for ourselves as a sponsor. I think the word I like to use is optimization rather than maximization. If you think about maximization, you're almost trying to maximize something for yourself, whereas optimization, you're almost trying to make something the best it can be for everyone. I know that's quite a worthy, you know, it's a very idealistic way of thinking, but even if we can move a bit closer to that way of thinking, we're moving in the right direction. So yeah, let's be optimistic about it, I say. It's a great opportunity.
I mean, keep the shareholders happy as well, because again, it's going to help with their own corporate social responsibility at the same time. So again, there's that to take into account as well.
Thank you both so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to find out more about David and Steve's research, please have a look in the episode description. You've been listening to the Research Reimagined podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all of the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on Twitter at NTU_research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research. Thanks for listening.